Every covenantal time experience is both retrospective, reconstructing and reliving the bygone, as well as prospective, anticipating the about to be. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, Episode 90, Temporal Time and the Eternal Temple. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10 Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
It is an anecdote that I saw online, and it is perhaps apocryphal, but it is nevertheless relevant to our topic today, for it concerns the question of appropriate appearance within a specific sphere. The story describes Israeli Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion showing up at a state dinner in Israel without a tie, when he was reproached by another attendee asking how one could appear in such a sartorial state. Ben-Gurion replied something to the effect of that he had been given explicit permission by Winston Churchill to show up at the state dinner, sans necktie. He was, of course, immediately asked, "What do you mean, Winston Churchill, Prime Minister in the United Kingdom, gave you permission to appear in Israel in such a state?" And Ben-Gurion, according to the tale, explained. And he said, or so the story goes, something like, "Well, I was attending once a state dinner in England, and I arrived without a tie. Winston Churchill saw the way I was dressed, and he said to me, 'Prime Minister Ben-Gurion, you may dress that way in Israel, but you certainly can't dress that way in London.'" Of course, the point of the anecdote is that Churchill was truly trying to communicate that when it came to official events, when it came to the seriousness of a state dinner, then correct clothing and impressive presentation is essential. Strikingly, Sefer HaChinuch, the anonymous medieval book that counts the commandments and explains them, offers up a biblical example of palace propriety pertaining to sartorial splendor in order to explain our mitzvah of the day. One of the codified mitzvot prohibits Kohanim, members of the temple priesthood, from ministering within the holy, or even entering and standing within the temple with hair that is disheveled or in an unkempt state, which, in the biblical period, is a sign of mourning after suffering a loss. The law is derived from instructions given to the family of Aaron when they experienced the death of family members. Because they still ministered within the tabernacle, Moses instructed them, "Rashechem al tifra'u," your heads should not be allowed to become disheveled, to be in an unkempt state, meaning public mourning through appearance is prohibited within the sacred sphere of the tabernacle and the temple. In explaining why this is so, Sefer HaChinuch, the aforementioned medieval book of the commandments, cites a section of the story that we will read this week, the tale of Mordechai and Esther, surrounding the events pertaining to Purim. When Mordechai hears of the terrible decree issued by Ahasuerus against the Jews, he mounts a public protest, making manifest mourning as a sign of his sadness and the anguish of his outcry. Walking throughout the city, he comes suddenly to the gates of the palace complex, where he must stop, for we are informed, "Ein lavo el sha'ar ha-melech bilavush sak." One must not enter through the gate of the king in sackcloth, in the garments of mourning. It is a violation of palace propriety. The anonymous author of Sefer HaChinuch argues that this is all the more the case when we speak not of the domicile of a human king, but the spiritual palace of the King of Kings. He writes, "Sefer HaChinuch explains that the prohibition of allowing one's hair to be disheveled involves allowing it to grow in an unusually long fashion. Or as he defines the mitzvah, quote, that the priests not enter the temple with grown hair, like mourners do, meaning to say that they not grow their hair long, as it is stated Leviticus 10:6, you shall not let your hair be wild." He then, a bit later, cites the Book of Esther. And here, as before, I'm utilizing the translation of Sepharia, which includes a few extra words for clarity. And he writes, quote, "And this is similar to what is stated in the scroll of Esther 4:2, for one could not enter the palace gate wearing sackcloth, meaning it is fitting to only come to the house of the monarchy in the manner of gladness, joy, and enjoyment, and not in the manner of mourning and distress." And he adds, a bit after, "And from fixing the importance of the place in its greatness, its splendor and its majesty in our thoughts, our hearts will soften and will be fitting to receive the good," end quote. Spiritual palace propriety, according to this approach, lies at the heart of the mitzvah. But one can go in a slightly different direction. Why must not one engage in public mourning within the temple? The answer may be that while, of course, a mourner is encountering a painful loss, a loss for which, outside the temple, the rituals of mourning are appropriate, indeed, essential, obligatory. At the same time, to enter the temple is to intimately engage with the God of the covenant. And as Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik pointed out again and again, in linking ourselves to the covenantal generations, we burst the bonds of temporal time and enter eternal time. Finding one's place within the covenant is in its own way a defiance of the finite nature of time here on earth. Rabbi Soloveitchik puts it this way in his great work, The Lonely Man of Faith, describing how, in the covenant, we connect to the eternal God, and therefore, in the joining of generations, go beyond the usual fetters of finitude. I will cite several selections. Rabbi Soloveitchik writes, quote, "In the covenantal community, man of faith finds deliverance from his isolation in the now, for the latter contains both the before and the after. Every covenantal time experience is both retrospective, reconstructing and reliving the bygone, as well as prospective, anticipating the about to be." And he adds a bit after. "Let us not forget that the covenantal community includes the He who addresses himself to man not only from the now dimension, but also from the supposedly already vanished past, from the ashes of a dead before facticity, as well as from the as yet unborn future. For all boundaries establishing before, now, and after disappear when God the Eternal speaks." And Rabbi Soloveitchik further adds later in the chapter, "Thus, the individual member of the covenantal faith community feels rooted in the past and related to the future. The before and the after are interwoven in his time experience. He is not a hitchhiker suddenly invited to get into a swiftly traveling vehicle, which emerged from nowhere and from which he will be dropped into the abyss of timelessness, while the vehicle will rush on into parts unknown, continually taking on new passengers and dropping the old ones. Covenantal man begins to find redemption from insecurity and to feel at home in the continuum of time and responsibility, which is experienced by him in its endless totality, me olam v'ad olam, from everlasting even to everlasting. He is no longer an evanescent being. He is rooted in everlasting time, in eternity itself." End quote. The mourner marks the finite nature of time and the painful feeling of loss that arises from it. That feeling is real. The loss is real. But covenant connects us to those physically gone, and that covenant is most profoundly felt within the temple sphere. As Rabbi Soloveitchik further adds, in the covenant, one experiences, quote, "countless thou generations which advance toward him from all sides and engage him in the great colloquy in which God himself participates with love and joy." As with Kohanic clothing, the appearance of the priests are meant in the temple to teach us about the nature of Judaism itself. A reminder that the covenant of the eternal people defies finite time and allows us, in a certain sense, to experience eternity. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.